Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And this evening, our guest is Mrs. Werthmann, and we're going to be talking to her about her experiences living in Austria under the Nazis during the period leading up to and including the Second World War. And Mrs. Werthmann is affiliated with the Eagle Forum in her state and certainly is a sought-after speaker. But she has an amazing story to tell, not only because of the experiences she lived through, but of the very stark similarities between what she experienced in Austria in those years leading up to the Second World War and what is actually going on in America today. As step by step, we lose our freedom in the name of course, fighting the wicked Osama bin Laden, who hasn't been heard from for years, other than, of course, tapes. And we don't know anything about those tapes. But, of course, we're told that he's hiding in a cave someplace, and we have to be fearful of him. Well, that is the background. Why, Mrs. Werthmann, thank you so very much for being with us again.
Good evening. I would tell you that Hitler, rolled into Austria with tanks and guns, I certainly would disturb history. The truth was, we elected Hitler by 98% of the vote by means of the ballot box. Well, how did that all come apart? That was 1938, in the 30s, in the late 30s. Austria was in a very, very deep depression. We had one-third of our workforce unemployed. We had inflation, 25%. And if you wanted to borrow money from the bank, you paid 25% interest. Farmers, businessmen were going, filing bankruptcy every day. And so nobody had any money, and people were hungry. I remember that about 30 people would come to our home every day just beg for a piece of bread and a bowl of soup. Two political factions were fighting each other. On one side, the Communist Party was getting very strong. As always, the Communists promised everything, the people's paradise, if we would vote for them. They incited strikes through the unions and hence all that unemployment. And we had whole blocks of cities on fire, and our police forces, they were unable to control it. We literally had anarchy. So the people who are by nature very patriotic and law-abiding, we looked to our government to do something, and we asked for an election, and hence we elected Hitler by 98%.
And that was really because things were so much better in Germany than they were in Austria.
Oh, yes. We just looked to the north to our neighbor, Germany. There was just a border between us. And they had full employment, they had law and order, they had a high living standard, and of course, there was hardly any difference in culture between us. We spoke the same language, we had the same culture, we were all German. And we said, well, why wouldn't it be that we could annex to Germany and would have the same high living standard?
You hold that thought for just a moment. We'll be back here in just a moment with Mrs. Werthmann. Well, you picked the story up there, and people wanted better living standards, and they saw what was happening in Germany under Adolf Hitler, and certainly he was getting money from all over the world. Their industry was thriving. They were, of course, rearming in violation of the Versailles Treaty, but none of the Allies seemed to be too concerned about that, and so the people of Austria voted then by 98% that they wanted the Germans to come in and take control of the government. Pick up the story there.
So we got a new government, and we were looking up to them, you know. They know how to govern, because everything was running so smooth in Germany. And first thing, we had regionalism, and I explained that to you. Austria had seven states, and Hitler said, oh, we're going to merge the seven states into four states. Then we have four governors. We call them Gauleiters. And it will be so easy to govern. Funny thing, when I was appointed under President Reagan to the Commission of Civil Rights, all of a sudden I got a letter from Denver that was Region 8, and South Dakota belonged to Region 8, and I further investigated that in America we had 10 regions. Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a very, very, almost a chilling similarity, because there has been a long effort to get away from states as much as we could, appoint regions, of course, where the governments are appointed from above rather than elected by the people, because there are certain people who really don't believe in representative government, although they pretend to. They really want an authoritarian system with 10 regions in the United States.
Right. Not only that, in my career as a lobbyist, I found a couple of years ago not only one, but two bills that they wanted to merge the 66 counties in South Dakota into 15. You can imagine the people from up north, they would have to travel 150 miles to the next courthouse. What a stupid idea, and I certainly testified that history was repeating itself. And needless to say, the bills went dead. So also, by getting a new government, nobody was elected anymore. From the school board, to the county commission, to the city commission, legislature, and governor, they were all appointed.
And this was, of course, in Austria now.
That was in Austria. So we thought, well, the Germans know how to govern. So they will certainly...
You hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment with Mrs. Werthmann as we explore what happened in Austria. Well, Mrs. Werthmann is telling us what happened in Austria, and they decided that they really wouldn't have any more elections, that whether it be the school board or the local board, everything was to be appointed by the government from above, so that things would run much more efficiently. So pick up the story.
Well, we thought the Germans know how to govern, and surely they would pick only the best people to be on boards and in the legislature and governors and so on, and we would have a very smooth-running country. And as Hitler promised that if we would vote for him, that within 3 weeks or a month, that everybody would have a job. Everybody would be employed. And sure enough, they passed the Full Employment Act, and public service jobs opened up, you know, all controlled under the government, you know. And what he promised, also, that those people, the business people and the farmers, would get the farms back, what the bank stole from them. And he truly gave them all their businesses and farms back, and that surely appealed to the people. So we got other laws, and one especially went over very big with women, the Equal Rights Amendment. Well, equal rights for women, we never heard about that before, and we thought, what a wonderful thing. Because women teachers, if they got married, they couldn't teach in the schools anymore. They were expected to stay home and raise a family and be good wives. And they were the ones who complained the loudest. They said, well, we invested a lot of money in our education and time, and it's about right that under equal rights, that women should be in the teaching force. And I would agree with that. But along with that came a lot of downsides. Like, for instance, when the war started in 1939, not only the men got drafted, but the girls, too, when they were of age 18. Needless to say, when the war was going on and the news started coming back to the families that their daughter was wounded or killed, you know, we saw that we got the frosting on the cake, and the cake was so rotten underneath. And that's why we fought so hard in this country in the 70s and 80s to defeat the Equal Rights Amendment, because the same thing would have happened here.
And, of course, the thing was that there were very, very powerful forces in the United States that wanted to get that Equal Rights Amendment, and had it not been for Phyllis Schlafly and the Eagle Forum, they would have gotten it through.
That's right.
So they could draft our daughters and our sisters, you know, in the coming battle, because they know there are going to be other wars. They just don't want the American people to know what's planned.
So when the women had to go out in the workforce, and of course under socialism, if everybody doesn't work full-time, you are a parasite. And so what happened to the children? Well, the state had a good remedy for that. They opened up big child care centers, we called them kindergarten, run by the government. You could bring your children 7 days a week, 24 hours. The longer you let them there, the better they liked it. And, of course, the staff, what we call babysitters, were not the babysitters. We know they were highly, highly trained professional people, psychology-trained people, how to mold those little kiddies exactly how the state wanted them. And then we had health care. Our health care before Hitler was good. We had good hospitals. We had good doctors. And we were privately insured. Well, this all was going to be changed. We had free health care. You could go to the doctor as often as you wanted for anything you wanted, but of course the downside was this: when the good doctor would go to his office in the morning, 40 patients were already waiting for him, so he couldn't spend a lot of time with them. And if you needed an elective surgery, like hemorrhoids, or if it wasn't an emergency or whatever, you waited a year to get a bed in the hospital. Because the hypochondriacs were filling up the hospital beds. So that was the health care, and many, many of our good doctors left the country because there was no more free practicing medicine, you know, free enterprise like we do it here, or almost what we did here. And they left the country. Education also changed a great deal. Education was nationalized, directly run by the government. The school board was just a figurehead. I remember before Hitler in Austria, I went to a public school. It was a very good school, excellent curriculum. And we prayed in school. We prayed at the beginning of the class and at the end of the class. And we had religion twice a week. The pastor would come in on Tuesday and Friday, and we were learning the religion, the Bible, and long prayers, but that was expected of us. This all changed. March 13, when I walked into my classroom, I was 12 years old. The crucifix was gone, and there was Hitler's picture, and left and right was the Nazi flag. And our teacher said, "This morning, we are not going to pray. We will sing Deutschland, Deutschland über alles, the national anthem." And she said we would not have religion classes anymore on Tuesday and Friday. We would have physical education instead. And on Sunday, that was National Youth Day, we were to report to the gymnasium at 8 o'clock in the morning. We couldn't go to church, and it was compulsory. It was absolutely that you had to, I mean, it was by force. You could not say, I won't go. So if our parents, for instance, would not send us, they got first a letter of warning, and the second time they did not send us, they got a stiff letter. They got fined 300 marks. That's about equivalent to $300 today. And the third time, they were subject to be jailed. Well, we still had a lot of respect for our parents, so we dutifully attended. The first 2 hours, we had political education. Today, I would call it political indoctrination. We were being told not to listen to our parents anymore. They were old-fashioned, old fogies. They have no idea how to raise a new generation. Only Hitler. Hitler would be the one that we should look up to and listen to and do everything what he said. And this was very, very, very much preached to us, and we were very, you know, that is what we had to do. And the rest of the day we had sports. We got all the free equipment. We got tennis rackets. We got golf clubs. And the boys of age 16 got motorcycles to form a motorcycle club. Not only that, they were taken out to the airfield, and they could ride gliders. Now, you can imagine at the end of the day that when we would come home, we would tell our parents how much fun we had, and it was just great, much better than going to our church and kneeling on the cold stone floor and listening to a preacher for an hour to do his sermon that was so boring. And we had so much fun. And we argued with our parents all the time. We were very defiant. When the next school term rolled around, my mother announced that she was taking me out of this horrible, horrible public school. And she was going to put me in a private school. I would have an excellent curriculum, but I wouldn't have any fun. And I thought, you cannot do that. Well, she said, well, yes, I will. And she took me off by train, and sure enough, there was an 8-foot wall with a high iron gate. And when I said goodbye to her, I almost hated her. But she said, one of these days you will grow up, and you will realize what good I did for you. Now you don't understand, but I hope and pray that some of these days you will understand. Needless to say, I thank her 1,000 times over today for what she did for me, that she didn't let me to be entrenched in this godless society under humanism like my other classmates. And sometime on holidays, I would travel home again for a visit and visit with my old classmates. And what I saw, I didn't like. Girls at age 16 were pregnant, having a baby for Hitler, and it was glorified. And the lifestyle has become so free living, and nobody ever went back to church. And is it any wonder that the churches in Europe are empty, except for the tourists? 4 generations grew up without God, without religion. It's very sad.
And of course, that's exactly what's happening in America today. There was no wall of separation between church and state. The people in the Supreme Court knew what they were doing when they took God and prayer out of our schools. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, you go ahead and pick the story up there, please.
Welfare, oh, we had a huge welfare system. They also, the Payment Act, the Payment Act was passed that everybody had a right to a certain income. And if your income did not match up with the government decreed, it was paid out by subsidies. Free housing, free heating supply, and food stamps, you name it, everything. Well, of course, our taxes also went up. Our tax structure was nearly 70%. And then we found out that because of the Equal Rights Amendment, the wealth of the country was equalized economically and socially. Economically because of the Full Payment Act, and socially by putting the children out of the home into daycare or kindergarten, what I said, the state literally took the family over. Then we had a planning agency. That was the bureaucrats would go out on the farm and inspect their land and told the farmer how much he had to plant, what to plant, and how much he has to harvest, disregarding the weather. And the livestock was being counted. You see, we had a food bank, but at that time we had the war, and we had to turn in all the food to the food bank, and we had ration cards. And if the farmer did not turn in what the government demanded, he got fined or even put in jail. They even counted the chickens and told the chickens how many eggs they had to lay. So everything was controlled. Rules and regulation. Rules and regulation. That's socialism.
Sort of sounds like this new program they're going to have. So by 2009, every animal, every livestock in the United States is going to have a chip in it and be reported to the government exactly where it is. This is to be the way it is to be here by 2009. Not one word. The average individual has no idea what's happening to the farmer. Oh, because, of course, nobody's telling them. But the similarities between what you're describing and what we're seeing here are really frightening, aren't they?
It's very frightening. It's very frightening. We also had the Federal Police Force, commonly known as the Gestapo, and they were everywhere. They were in civilian clothes. We didn't know who they were, but we know that they were out there, and we were terrible frightened. For instance, now, like I said, that all our food was being rationed. We had ration cards. We had to go to the grocery store and give the ration stamp, and then you got your food. And you had to naturally pay for it. If anybody in your home died, like Grandma, and of course she had a ration card, and you quickly went to the store and bought this pound of sugar, what we got a month, and so the next day the Gestapo would knock on your door.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, Mrs. Werthmann is saying that, of course, everybody had a food stamp, so they had everything was rationed. Certainly you'd have you were allowed a pound of sugar a month, and maybe grandmother died, and you went to the store right after she died to buy the pound of sugar before you had to turn in a ration card, and then the next day the Gestapo would be at your door. Pick up the story there.
Gestapo would be at the door and said, we know that you took the food stamp, the ration card stamp from your grandma. By law, you're supposed to turn that in, and you bought that sugar. Now, we are not going to arrest you, but you have to inform on your boss, your neighbor, and your friends, anybody you know, how they think politically. And you have to come to our office and report every week to us. And if you don't, then we arrest you. And of course, we know that people were disappearing, but we had no idea where he went. That was the Gestapo. We also had euthanasia. Well, by that time, my education advanced, and we had, you know, we didn't have like here that we went by semesters. We had all year school, all year college. And the last year of my college, I was sent to a small alpine village to do my practice teaching. And as I got to that village of about 800-900 people, I was told that they had about 15 mentally handicapped people there, because the village was in the wintertime isolated. The mountain pass was closed and nobody could get out and nobody relatively could come in. And so often, as it happened, people intermarry. And we know by genetics that sometimes the offspring are a bit retarded. And that's what happened to those 15 people. And one I know especially well was the janitor in the school I taught, Vincent. One day I looked out by the classroom window, and there was a van from the state health department, and all these 15 people, including Vincent, they lined up with a bundle under their arm being shoved into that van. And I asked the principal, what are they doing with those people? And he said, well, you know, the people from the health department came to their parents, and they asked them if they want their son or daughter institutionalized to teach him how to read and write. They only would have to sign the paper here, but they couldn't visit them for 6 months because they might get homesick. Well, every parent gladly signed the paper because nobody really could deny their son or daughter the pleasure how to learn to read. Well, about a good 6 months later, the letters started dribbling back to the families that their daughter or their son died a natural but merciful death. So in that small village, the news traveled very fast. We know that they were in excellent health when they left. And why should they all die within 6 months? We realized that they were being euthanized. You know, we didn't know that there were concentration camps. We did not know until the American liberated us. It was a tightly guarded secret. Only a handful of the upper echelons in the government really know about it. Any guard or anybody who worked there, they would be immediately shot if they would reveal anything about a concentration camp. We were in total fear all the time. We were scared. We also had gun control. The government were telling us that there certainly needs to be more gun safety. A lot of people get hurt by hunting and also by cleaning guns, and especially children are playing with guns, and we have to do something about it. And we had criminals again. The only way that they could trace the criminals by the serial number of the gun. And that's why we need to register our guns, so that they know by means of the serial number how they could track somebody who commits a crime. Well, didn't take very long. They said, no, it really didn't help. And, you know, we just have to turn our guns in. Then there won't be any more crime. Then there will nobody get hurt. And, of course, they already know who had guns because we registered them. And there was capital punishment if you did not turn in your gun. I didn't see any heroes.
Hold that. We'll be back in just a moment. Thank you. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, Ms. Worthman saying that the first of all, they got the guns registered, and then, of course, they demand you sent them in, and of course, it was capital punishment if you didn't turn in your guns. And you hear all of these people, these hypocrites in government saying, oh, we're so worried about the children and the danger of guns, and we've just got to take the guns away from the people. And yet, of course, Dianne Feinstein, when she was the mayor of San Francisco, she wanted to be able to carry a gun. It's just that she didn't want anybody else to carry a gun to protect themselves. So these people know exactly what they're doing, and these are stepping stones along the way. It's almost like what we're seeing today is deja vu all over again. Please go ahead with the story.
Well, Hitler was a very clever geopolitical politician, at least during the first 3 years. You could see that he had everything planned. As a matter of fact, he wrote a book, Mein Kampf, My Struggle. And he wrote in that book everything what he was going to do. But the problem was that hardly anybody read it because everybody was so involved in sports. Athletic events were the big thing. That was the big thing in the country. Nothing else mattered except sports. So, dictatorship did not happen overnight. It took 5 years, gradually, very gradually, from 1938 until 1943. You know, the radio station was owned and operated by the government. They could tell us whatever they want to. And if you would listen to a foreign radio station, like BBC, that's the English radio station, there was capital punishment on that. So you didn't do that. The news media was censored before it would hit the streets. The newspaper only could write what the government would allow them to write. And nobody could get out of the country. The borders were all closed, and nobody could get in. So we had no information, none whatsoever. We had no movement of any kind because we were just too scared. And those people who did start something, you know, to uprise, they got killed immediately. So nobody was there going to do anything. So if I give you a scientific example, if you take a frog and put the frog in a pot of boiling water on the stove, the frog will jump out immediately.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment as we bring our other stations on board here. This is Dr. Stan and Mrs. Burton simply talking about what things and how they were really in Germany at the time, and little bit why they were losing their freedom, always in the name of course, protecting the state or in the good of the people, or and, of course, they bought the support of the people, and everybody was so involved in sports, and nobody really wanted to take a stand, and those few people who did have the courage to take a stand were immediately killed. So then she was using the analogy of the frog in the boiling water. And you pick that story up, please.
But if you put the frog in a pot of cold water and start boiling him gradually, he'll sit in there and he will not flex a muscle. And he will be boiled to death. And that's what happened to us. We were being boiled to death and we couldn't flex a muscle. Hitler also nationalized the churches. He said, oh, we have these beautiful cathedrals from the 13th century and earlier. They need a lot of money for upkeep, restoration, and the money what you give on Sunday is just not enough that you could maintain the churches. So you will have to start a church tax. And then he said the atheists will have to pay too. And that appealed to the people. Suck it to the atheists, that they have to pay church tax. And that way, the ministers and priests couldn't speak out. They were being muscled. And if they said a word or anything, they lost their funding. So he controlled the churches, totally. And like I said, dictatorship didn't happen overnight. Had we have dictatorship from the very beginning, we would have fought to the last men or women. We would have fought a bloody, bloody battle for our freedom. But it was too late. All we had left was broom handles. And you will never read in a history book that a revolution was fought with broom handles. So that's how we had to live under total, total dictatorship. And now I tell you another happening to me. In 1985, I had the opportunity to go to Geneva, Switzerland, to attend the summit conference of President Reagan and Gorbachev. My mission was to infiltrate the peace movement. I actually marched with Bella Abzug and Jesse Jackson in disguise. I looked like a hippie. And, of course, all the Hollywood people, Barbara Boxer was one of them, Hollywood stars, and all the people who hated America, and, of course, a lot of people in Europe, you know, the peaceniks and all were there supporting Gorbachev. The American women who came over there, they supported President Reagan. And as we marched to the Hotel Hilton for the press conference, I found that as we arrived, Bella Abzug greeted her comrade, a woman who was in the German parliament with the Green Party, and she greeted her, "I have a big surprise for you. We are going to have a private meeting with Gorbachev." And she spoke in fluent German, which language I could understand. I thought that was interesting, that a congresswoman would tie up with a German Green Party, also a very, very left-wing person, that they could have a private meeting with Gorbachev.
Just for our listeners, of course, Bella Abzug was a congresswoman, a member of the United States Congress, and she was also certainly, if not a member of the Communist Party, very, very sympathetic with the entire world communist movement. So go right ahead.
So I looked around that in that room. There were about 8 or 10 other people in there who were not with the peace march. So I walked up to one woman, and of course I had a lot of buttons on me, peace buttons, and one especially, Physician for Social Responsibility. That's the left wing of the American Medical Association. And she understood what those buttons meant. So I said to her, "How come you weren't at the peace march?" And she said, "Well, we couldn't be seen in public." And I said, "Why not? Everybody else was there." She said, "Well, we came over the border illegal." And I said, "Well, why?" She said, "We are all members of the German Communist Party." I said, "That is very interesting. Tell me more about it. What are your plans here? What's the future?" So she started telling me. She said, "Right now, we will take Nicaragua, then we'll take Honduras," what she meant, to infiltrate the communist philosophy and their movement. "And then we go to Mexico." And I said, "Mexico, that's such a poor, corrupt country. Why would you go there?" And she said, "Oh," she said, "that is our most important base that we can operate from." And I said, "Operate on what?" "Well," she said, "that we can call back the territories, what the United States stole from us." And then she rattled off the states, Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado, and on and on. So I said, "Well, by doing that, you need a lot of people. You almost literally have to foment a revolution." And she laughed out loud. And she said, "You American are so naive." She She said, your churches are doing the work for us. And it hit me like a ton of bricks. Because in some of the church newspapers, I was reading that there was a sanctuary movement. And they were bringing in all these people over the border and housing them and feeding them and then turn them over to the government. And that was in 1985. And look what is happening now. What is happening now? I cannot believe how many illegal alien people are coming into the United States. 15 million, maybe 20. They're not all looking for jobs. They're not all looking for jobs. Just look May 1st, what they did in Los Angeles.
A half a million people are out on the streets demonstrating. You have to have a tremendous amount of power and wealth to put together such a great peaceful march. And it was a peaceful march. And it was funded in large part by the Ford Foundation and by your own government that are working with the Marxist revolutionaries because they want, of course, this whole illegal immigration movement. In fact, the Ford Foundation has been funding La Raza, which is a racist organization. La Raza means the race. And, of course, Maldave, Mensa, all of these organizations for the illegal immigrants are being funded in large part by the great tax-exempt foundations and by our government and by our corporations that want this revolutionary movement, which is exactly what this communist woman was telling you back there in 1985, isn't it?
Exactly, yes. Yes, exactly. I was just struck. I thought, can this happen in the United States? And I thought for a while, this cannot happen. That was in 1985. And just look what is happening now. And why isn't our president doing anything? Why isn't he stopping? Why doesn't he see that our borders are being closed? It's unbelievable. Any terrorist can come in and whatever, and drugs and everything else, and nothing is being done about it. Patrick Buchanan wrote a book, and it just came out as a bestseller. And so did a gentleman by name. His name is Gilchrist.
Yes,
he started the Minutemen.
That would be Jim Gilchrist and Dr. Corsi together.
Dr. Corsi,
the Minuteman, we actually carry that book. It is available through our ministry.
Good. I met those gentlemen when I was over the weekend in Washington. They are great people. They are great people. We have to save America. We have to get that message out to everybody. Everybody and every elected official need to get the... CD from Dr. Corsi's speech and find out what is really going on behind closed doors.
And, of course, the thing is that we have people at the highest levels of both political parties who do not believe in this national sovereignty. They want to merge all of North America into the North American community. It's been planned for a long time. Go right ahead.
Just like they merged Europe, a united Europe. And you know what happened? They devaluated their money. They have the euro now. And the prices all state you pay with the euro what you paid before in Deutschmark, and you pay twice the amount. And what saving you have in the bank is only half worth. And if they do that to the Amero, we are losing 50% of our money. They do it on the same principle what they did in Europe with the euro. It's frightening. It's frightening what these people have in mind. They have in mind a one-world government, a one-world religion.
The average American, of course, doesn't know this, and of course, because they listen to Rush Limbaugh and they listen to Sean Hannity, a couple of the finest conservatives money could buy. Everything is done to keep the truth from the American people, and anybody who talks about that is immediately labeled as, oh, they believe it, a conspiracy. Well, it's not a conspiracy. It's right out in the open.
And you can go to the
website, spp.gov, or the Commerce Department. And they will tell you about the 20 working organizations, 20 committees they have. They won't tell you who's on the committee, what the committees are doing, but they're listed there, and they're planning the demise of our sovereignty. And the same thing with the Trans-America Highway. All of these things are part of a much larger plan. But, of course, they're not going to tell the American people, and they're going to lie to them, as they have lied about so many other things. And it is such a shame when we cannot trust the people in government, but they have to understand they have a different dream, they have a different objective, they have a different goal, because I believe they worship a different God.
I think they do. And speaking of that superhighway, it's also interesting the way they have it planned. It's coming up on Interstate 35 that goes through Minnesota. And, you know, Minnesota is very, the land, they have many, many lakes, and there's lots and lots of water. And what they have to do is wipe out whole villages, because the superhighway is, 3 football fields wide. And they also, along with it, will run a train up all the way to Canada. So Minnesota is a union state. And the unions are very strong in Minnesota. And I think there will be a big, big battle. And when they're going to wipe out farmland, lots of farmland and villages, people will rise up. As long as we have guns, we can do that.
Because the average American is not going to... The average American is going to say, we're a nation of laws, we'll just go along. It's easier just to go along and get along. I fear that the American, this wonderful spirit that once made America unique, has been pretty well subdued, and we're so busy watching sports like they did in Austria. We're so busy looking to government to provide for us like they did in Austria. And I can see the day coming very soon when they're going to disarm the American people in the name of protecting us from Osama bin Laden or some other similar make-believe character.
Well, I don't think in the Western states here anybody will give up their guns easily. I do not believe so, because the people I know around here, they keep their guns right at home and they're going to use it. And speaking of when they take the land... for a superhighway, you know, this is why the Supreme Court ruled on eminent domain. It was precisely for that purpose.
In other words, so they could actually take the land away from the private people and put them into this privately owned highway that will be privately built. It's being built by a Spanish corporation. And, of course, our governors in Texas and certainly even Jeb Bush, it's a separate highway, but it's part of the whole system. They're all working, of course, to use the power of the state to take away people's property, to give it to private corporations for building private toll roads.
It's absolutely frightening. It's absolutely frightening. And we should inform as many people as we possibly can, because I see history repeating itself even worse. Not even Hitler did that he would confiscate land and private domain. He ruled and regulated us, but he did not take property away. He did that on Jews, yes, he did, but not on everybody else. I mean, it's unbelievable what is in store for us.
And I think the average American really doesn't know, and this is why I think your story is so very, very important, because, of course, you draw the analogy between what happened in your country, in Austria, and what is happening here in America today. And, of course, we have a crisis in health care. Why? There was no crisis in health care. The government created the crisis by, of course, coming in with the Medicare and Medicaid. And I can remember when, you could buy, get $50 a day and this wasn't too long ago, this was 1964, you know, $50 a day for a hospital room and all the things with it. Now it'll cost you maybe $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 a day, thanks to government.
That's right.
They came up with HMOs, but you don't find the congressmen and their families in health maintenance organizations. That's just for the common people. They're coming up with a two-tiered system ready for society as we move towards the sort of system they have in Mexico with a group of fabulously wealthy people and then, of course, doing away with the middle class and impoverishing everybody else.
That's true. Well, those of us who sailed past the Statue of Liberty, we came to a country of unbelievable opportunity and unbelievable freedom. America is the greatest country in the world. If we can keep it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the question. Are there enough people out there who really can keep it? And I hope you'll want to get a copy of this program tonight with Mrs. Werthmann. I think it's a very important one. In fact, we'll probably be putting it into one of our four-tape sets. Because you have to understand that history has a way of repeating itself over and over again. And as George Santayana told us, those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. You hold on there for just a minute here. Well, our guest this evening, Mrs. Werthmann, and do you have a website or any way people can get hold of you?
No, I don't have a website, but I have a brochure. If anybody sends me a stamped envelope, self-addressed, with $2, I'll send you the brochure. And my address is 1604 Hilltop Drive, Pier, I spell it, P-I-E-R-R-E, South Dakota, 57501.
Can you give that address one more time, please?
1604 mm-hmm. Hilltop Drive, Pier, P-I-E-R-R-E, South Dakota, 57501.
All right, fine. That's 1604 Hilltop Drive, T-I-E-R-R-E, South Dakota, 57501. Is this just sort of a little summary of the story you've told, or what's in these in the little?
Well, in the brochure, it's about equivalent what I said tonight. Only there is a little more in there when I lived under communism.
What about living under communism?
Well, living under communism was like living in one concentration camp. We were under the occupation of the Soviets, and you were frightened to go out on the street. Women were being raped from age 12 up to 90, and they behaved like animals. They were horrible. They were horrible, horrible, drunken animals. And when they left in 1954, they cut down whole orchards, emptied out whole factories, and shipped it back to Russia, and stole whatever they could, take with them, you know. And they also demanded the Soviet government that Austria, who had plenty natural gas, that Austria will cap their gas lines and buy the gas from Russia. And it still is so. Otherwise, they wouldn't have left.
Well, it's a tragic story, and there's so much more, and maybe we could do another program on that. But thank you very much for being with us.
You're so welcome. It was a pleasure.
God bless you, and thanks
thank
for
having you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And I hope you enjoyed our program this evening with Mrs. Werthmann. We've had her on before, and I always enjoy her story, even though I've heard it several times before. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, if you'd like to get a brochure that Mrs. Werthmann has, if you'll send $2 to her, my suggested gift of $2 to 1604 Hilltop Drive in Tierra, South Dakota. That's T-I-E-R-R-E, South Dakota, 57501. Why, she'll send you a brochure that tells the story you heard tonight, plus what it was like living under communism, and of course, She tells just the terrible brutality of the communists when they were there and the massive rapes, but you'll be pleased to know that your tax money financed that, actually. At the end of the Second World War, the traitors in Washington, D.C. turned the plates for printing American occupation currency over to the communist government so they could print American occupation money so we could actually then redeem that to finance the communist occupation of Eastern Europe. That story comes from Major Jordan's diary. It's all well documented. Of course, you're never going to see those reports put out by the government. And so that is, once again, 1604 Hilltop Drive, Tierra, South Dakota. And then, of course, Pierre, P-I-E-R-R-E, Pierre, South Dakota, 57501. Anyway, and then, of course, this is the time when we want to remind our listeners, Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and quite frankly, we could appreciate your help if you want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. You're in a position to help us, because we, of course, are on 60 outlets every single week. We have an opportunity to reach people across America, but quite frankly, we need your help to continue doing what we're doing. So remember, if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Then, of course, we're going to be putting on the all-day seminar here in the Monterey Bay area. That's the 29th of October. And if you can come, I think you'll find it fascinating. Constance Cumby will be here, and she talks extensively on the New Age, the World Occult Movement. I think she is the leading expert on that, I know. And then, of course, Chris Pinto, who is the producer and director of the award-winning video, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. That's Chris Pinto, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, and then so many other people will be here. We'll have a great lineup of speakers, and just hope you can come. But you're going to have to sign up. We're going to be serving lunch. We have to know how many people are here, and if you're coming from elsewhere, we'll scratch you a list of the various hotels, and, of course, a map as to how to get here. Our telephone number, again, 1-800-544-8927. The date, October 29th. That's all-day seminar here in the Monterey Bay area. And then, of course, if you have not yet read my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, you really need to get it. If you want to understand what's going on, this move towards creating a North American Union, we have a video, and it was called American Union 2005. And if you watch this, you'll see David Rockefeller, who's really one of the major forces behind this entire movement. David Rockefeller talking for maybe half an hour, 45 minutes, about the coming American Union that planned to have this in place by 2005. Fortunately, they haven't. Now they're talking about 2010. But with that comes the end of American sovereignty. And that's exactly what David Rockefeller and the men who actually support him want. If you have not yet read David Rockefeller's memoirs, where he admits that he is part of a cabal that is conspiring to create a new international economic order, we carry the book, Memoirs. You also find out that David's daughter is a very good friend of Fidel Castro, that great American patriot. I mean, I guess he's not a great American patriot, but we brought him to power. And if you doubt that, we have a video, my interview with the American ambassador to Cuba in 1958-59, Ambassador Earl Smith, and that's the video World Revolution, and that, and book Hitler's Cross, the story about how Hitler used the church, just as the church is being used in America today. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Again, Hitler's Cross, Union, American Union, 2005. And we'll be back in just a moment for the next program. Thank you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality was it's usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station we're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and, well, our special guest this evening is Melody Cederstrom, and we're going to be talking about what's happening in the financial markets. And Melody supports Radio Liberty, and we certainly support Melody. We think she does a great job. But we're going to talk just momentarily about what's happening. As you notice, the stock market is going up. Why, it's almost to its all-time high. Why is it going up? I mean, look at what's happening. I mean, the automotive industry, at least the Ford and General Motors, are losing money on every car that they sell, just about. And we find out, of course, that Ford is buying out all 75,000 of its employees, is going to give them money to just quit their jobs, $140,000, walk away from your insurance, walk away from your pension fund, and we'll go ahead and give you, $140,000. General Motors buying out their employees, they're all moving offshore. American industry is leaving this country because it cannot be competitive in a global market with the wages they have here. They're going to just have to do away with those wages and lower the living standards and destroy the middle class in the process. Now, the only thing that's really keeping the economy going primarily in the past has been the housing market, and that has begun to contract, although certainly in some areas of the country, prices are still going up. In many areas of the country, prices are stabilized or beginning to fall. And I think that most people realize that this is going to continue. In other words, the housing market is going to gradually contract, which will take a tremendous amount of money out of the economy and will certainly have a profound impact. And then, of course, we see the price of gasoline falling. Why should the price of gasoline be falling? Why should the stock market be going up? Why, very simply, we're going to election, and I personally believe it's all manipulated. You want to be fat and happy and certainly not concerned when the November election comes along so that you won't rock the boat so we can continue doing what we're doing. I'll just tell you one quick little story. It comes from a very reliable source who describes being at a luncheon or a breakfast with the head of the Democratic Party and two major Republican senators, and the Democrat was saying how wonderful it was that the Democrats were going to take control of the House of Representatives and maybe the Senate in November because people were going to be so unhappy with the Republican Party. And the Republican senators let him talk, and finally one of the Republican senators said, you really don't understand. By the time we get to November, the price of gasoline will be down to $2 a gallon, and you can just kiss goodbye to your Democrat majority in the House of Representatives. Now, I believe the story was told whether gas will get down to $2 a gallon, or maybe it'll be $2.25 or $2.35, but ladies and gentlemen, it's all being manipulated. And until we understand that, we really can't understand much of anything, including what's happening to the price of gold and silver. And with that, Melody, thanks for being with us tonight.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. I appreciate being here. I always enjoy being here. And when you talk about the Republicans and the Democrats, a month ago, I would have thought that the Democrats would have been able to go in there and at least we could try and vote some of those Republicans out. But as we see what's being happening, as we see what's being done to, as what you mentioned, the gasoline, and the people out there are becoming lulled back into their complacency. We see even the media, the mainstream media, sort of take a reversal and with instilling the fear that it was a good thing that we went to Iraq.
Hold that thought right there. We're right back in just a moment. All right, go right ahead, Melody.
And the mainstream media is changing public opinion. And today, that person could be very well correct that there might not be any changes.
Well, I don't know what's going to happen in November. I just thought it was an interesting story. It's sort of more or less suggesting that the senators, the Republican senators, knew that the price of oil and the price then of gasoline are being manipulated, and I believe that they are.
Yeah.
And we'll have to wait and see what happens in November. But isn't it terrible when we suddenly realize that the radio is no Santa Claus, that the Tooth Fairy doesn't exist, that the Easter Bunny is simply a figment of our imagination, and this so-called, you know, free market system really doesn't work. It's all manipulated, the market's manipulated, our reality is manipulated, and once we can accept that, then we can begin to understand really what's going on, and we can begin making our preparations for what lies ahead.
Well, I do hope that people go out, and the listeners go out, and they do vote, and I plan on voting for something other than a Republican or a Democrat, anything to try to get them out of office, and whether it'll do any good, who knows, because we all know the voter fraud exists and so forth, but I guess we just still have to try. So.
Well, I think I tell people just vote absentee, then they have to count your ballot. The voting machines are fixed. In fact, the one that they had there in Ohio during the last election, where there were 800 people registered in the district and 4,000 votes for George Bush. And the explanation, I mean, how could you get 4,000 votes in a precinct with 800 people? And they said, well, the machine had a hiccup, obviously. And,
you
know, if that was the most normal thing in the world. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you can't trust electronic voting. They can rig those elections, so vote absentee. That's what I'm going to do. Everybody should vote absentee. And if we get enough people voting absentee and letting people know that we don't trust the electronic voting machine, we think they're fixing the elections, maybe we can get back to honest elections.
Well, it's certainly a start, but what we have to do is make sure we do vote. And so many people I hear, my listeners, my clients, tell me they don't want to vote because it's just a fixed affair and so forth, and you still have to go out there and vote. And so we want to do that. But
well, certainly it's been interesting what's happened to gold and silver this last few weeks, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. And it's interesting, too, because no matter how bullish the fundamentals are, we know that markets, it's a reminder that markets, they do not go up in a straight line, and we do have corrections along the way. But the fundamentals for long term are still the same.
Hold that thought right there, please. Well, Melody is just saying that markets don't go up straight. They go up and down and up and down. But the long term fundamentals are, and pick up the story there, Melody.
They're still strong. It's still very bullish for gold for long term. None of the fundamentals have changed. We have the oil prices, most likely due to the elections, and that'll be trading between $60 and $70 per barrel. And this will keep the support solid for the price of gold and silver in the long term. We have the physical buying from the Far East, India. They're seen buying 10% more gold. It's reported that they'll import 10% more gold this year as a fall in the world prices. So the fall in gold is good because you're going to have more of a demand that'll increase the price of gold. And we're going into their marriage and festival season, and so it's a buying opportunity for those consumers. And the Indians, and like so many, the Chinese, they understand gold. When they make money and they take home their paychecks, they think about their savings is in gold. Whereas here in the States and in a lot of European countries and Canada, no one saves, and the last thought is certainly purchasing gold. So the Indians understand gold, and they think about it, and they buy it, and they will continue to buy it. So
I understand they're even buying quite a bit of silver, because certainly the Indians love silver.
Yes, they love. Well, they understand. See, what people don't understand is wealth has to be measured against something. And the Indians and the Chinese, they show their wealth by their gold. And their gold represents their status in society. And many of them will wear the gold is bought in jewelry in 24-karat bracelets, and the women will wear their bangles up their arms, and the more bangles you have, the higher you are. So it's a very status symbol in India, and they like it. And same way with China. When they have their weddings, gold is given as gifts. And so they understand it. They understand that their wealth is based, and it has to show a value, and that value is gold. So
I think it's really so interesting. Here in the West, we used to always believe in the value of money. And, of course, this one idea of compound interest. Oh, my goodness, the greatest secret in the world, the most powerful thing in the world, is the power of compound interest. And if you could just take a dollar and have it invested at 3%, you know, over a period of 50 years, you know, how this would double and double and double. And if you got 4 or 5% interest, how great that is. And the miracle of compound interest. And that really is true if you have a stable currency. But if you are getting 3% interest on your money and the inflation rate is 10%, which is what it really is in the United States, why, of course, you're going behind 7% every year and you're losing 7% of the value of money you've worked hard for. Why bother? Why not just go out and spend it and have a good time? If you don't have a stable currency, people tend to spend their money. There is no savings, and that's the problem in America today. There's no savings, and as the economy collapses and more people, then, of course, are out of work. Of course, they're expecting the IRS is going to pay them money, and this is what we have in America. If you don't make enough money, they give you money. But what happens when the government doesn't have the money to give you? Then what happens? What happens when the states, you know, have all their pension funds, can't pay out in the pension funds because there's not enough money in the pension funds? What happens when the states have borrowed money on their bonds? And like the country of Argentina just a few years ago, they simply offer to pay 25% on what they borrowed. And if you don't like it, you can get nothing, which is what Argentina did, and impoverished large numbers of people all throughout Europe who had been encouraged by their bankers, their friendly bankers, to borrow, you know, to lend money to Argentina. But when the whole economy begins to collapse, why, you know, where are you going to put your money into bonds? Can you be sure they're going to be redeemed? Are you going to put them into hedge funds? Are you going to put them in the bank at 3% interest with a 10% inflation? I mean, where are you going to put your money? And, of course, that's where gold and silver come in, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And people have seemed to forgotten safety and what you mentioned, savings. And when you purchase gold and silver, you have to remember that provides the safety. For that rainy day, for when there are economic problems in an economy. And a lot of people, you know, they don't want to look for safety because it's not a very exciting investment, safety. You know, safety protects your purchasing power. What's so great about that? I want to have a 20% investment increase on my gold. Well, that will come. But first and foremost, people have to think about protecting their purchasing power, and that's what gold does. The profit on the gold is really, truly secondary. That comes along, and it will come along. And no one knows the exact time. No one has a crystal ball to know when things will happen and when gold will continue to rise. But all the problems that this country faces, all the problems that we've mentioned on the program that you talk about, are real, and they will impact the economy of this country and around the world. People forget. We're globalized. What happens here happens there, and what happens there happens here. And so first and foremost, safety is more important, because when you have that gold in your portfolio, and when something happens, no matter what happens, you will be better off than your neighbor that doesn't have any gold. And that's what you have to think about. Gold is your savings account. It's your safety net. And still, less than 1% of the American public holds any gold, either in the form of bullion or collectibles. And at some point, and in the very near future, the public will realize that gold is undervalued. When you have a falling dollar, they want to go to something that will protect their purchasing power, and it will be gold. And so even if we increase that 1% of the American public to 2% or even 3%, imagine what that will do to the demand of gold and what it will do to the price of gold. So you have some major... We don't need to have 80% of the people that are invested in stocks to buy gold. We only need another 1% or maybe even 2%. And basically, that's probably all that will buy gold anyway. So we need a small percentage. And when those people wake up and they realize the undervalued asset that gold is, they will stampede into them, and you will have the continued bull market in gold and silver.
I think it's so very interesting that Russia apparently is increasing their gold reserves. In other words, they want something behind their currency that has real value. They don't want a lot of paper money there, because paper money is redeemable in paper money. But down through the ages, why gold has had its value and maintain its value. And so Russia is talking about increasing its gold holdings. Certainly China is talking about it. Argentina is increasing the gold so that they will have a stable currency. And America is doing everything they can to destroy the value of our currency. And it's not that they don't understand the truth of this. In fact, Alan Greenspan told Congressman Ron Paul, and we've told this story before, but I think you need to think about it. Ron Paul asked Alan Greenspan, what about that essay you wrote back in 1966, you know, about the value and the importance of gold? Are you ready to renounce that for the policies of the Federal Reserve System? And Alan Greenspan's response was, I've recently reread the article. I wouldn't change one word of it. Get that article. Read that article. It's in our Financial Tsunami syllabus. And Alan Greenspan says what I believe to be absolutely true. The attack on gold is an effort to destroy the ability of the American people to have any wealth. And gold is the only thing that is of any real value in the monetary system. And if Alan Greenspan does that, then why did he do everything he could to destroy the value of our currency? We have to ask that question. But we also have to learn from what he said. He's a very smart man, and he believes in the value of gold. And I'm sure that his holdings are in gold, not simply in paper currency. But the average individual does not understand the history of money nor the value of the something solidly behind your currency. And you can always exchange it for something. What's going to happen to paper money? When, of course, the value of our paper money begins to fall and fall dramatically. It hasn't begun yet. It's all being manipulated, but the day of reckoning will come. I really fear, especially if we move into a war in the Middle East and lose the confidence of the rest of the countries of the world. Well, Melody, has business pretty well quieted down since the gold and silver have been off so dramatically?
Well, you know, we had a little bit of a quiet period there, but it's beginning to turn around. And the inquiries, and when we talk about that additional 1% and 2% of the people, they're coming alive. You know, maybe not to the same degree they were when gold was 730, but they're beginning to, they know there's something wrong. And, you know, when you have oil prices drop from $3 to $2.29, and oil prices from $74 down to $60. I mean, they know there's something wrong. Unfortunately, most of them are in a position where they're just thankful that the prices have gone down, because it was such a burden on their finances. So, but unfortunately, they don't care enough to find out what's really happening and why the prices were driven down like that. They can't associate the reason.
No, I'm sure they can't. Well, our job, of course, is to at least warn people about what lies ahead and to try to get them thinking about, you know, what is going to happen. If we get to war with Iran, and apparently it's pretty much of a given that whether it'll be shortly after the election, I certainly hope and pray it's not going to be before the election, but if it is in December or January, when we launch an all-out attack on certainly on Iran, an air attack on Iran, and the entire Islamic world is turned against America. Indeed, most of the world is turned against our nation. Well, Melody, go ahead, pick the story up there.
Well, when you talk about Iran, it amazed me how they could, it was, you know, where they go to the UN and everyone's heard the stories and the speeches and the comments by the Iranian president and by the Venezuelan president. And just, I would think, and my belief is the response or the lack of response, it's just kind of enforces that it won't be long before we end up in a war.
No, really, it was so funny you talk about the response to the United Nations. Apparently, when President Bush gave his speech, he got a polite response. When President Ahmadinejad gave his speech, he got a polite response. When Hugo Chavez of Venezuela got up and called Bush the devil, when he talked against American imperialism and America being the big bully, he got so much of a response they had to keep interrupting the applause so they could get the rest of the speech in. I mean, they have tremendous enthusiasm in the United Nations, which, of course, we finance completely. You know, they're so enthusiastic about the criticism of the United States that they had to just keep... It wasn't that they had to interrupt the speech. They had to interrupt the applause so they could get on with the talk. Mm-hmm. And when you see this sort of thing happening, you begin to realize the attitude of people throughout the world towards our country, towards the country we love. But our leaders have been taking advantage of other countries and bullying them and forcing them. And everybody throughout the world knows that if you're a world leader and they don't want you in office, they simply have you. Well, your airplane explodes in air, your helicopter explodes in air, or there's a coup or something like that. And this has happened time and time again. Those people who doubt it should read the book Confessions of an Economic Hitman. Confessions of an Economic Hitman. Or here are four tape set of interviews with Mr. John Perkins to understand what the real world is. And then you will understand why when President Hugo Chavez, who I think is really a terrible person, got up and criticized the United States, they didn't have to interrupt his speech. They had to interrupt their applause to get, so he could go back to his speech. I think this bodes very, very poorly for America.
Absolutely, and you're getting a coalition between the Iran and Venezuela and you know, some of these smaller countries, and one alone, you know, just like any group, one alone, they don't have the power, but you get them all together and they can be significant. So I just thought it was interesting, and I like you, I can't imagine what will happen should we go to war with Iran, and I don't think people really understand the consequences of what will happen if we do so. But, I mean, that's almost a given that we will be there. It's just a matter of if and when. And if our administration thinks that they're running out of time, it might be sooner than later.
Well, what really frightened me is so many good Christians that I know seem to be so intent upon going over there and killing all those Muslims who they think are a threat to us. There are very, very few radical Muslims in the world today, but there's a growing number, and there's a growing number because of what we've done. On September 11, 2001, there was a great deal of goodwill throughout the Muslim world towards America. And after going into Afghanistan and slaughtering the people there and killing over 100,000 people in Iraq, and, of course, 800,000 have fled the country, why, of course, there's not much goodwill left for America. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Melody Cederstrom. We're talking about really what's happening financially and the fact that even though we're told everything is really going great here in America, how strong the economy is, if you look and see the jobs, the government's jobs that they're creating are very, very poor jobs. They're lying about a lot of the jobs. We are constantly losing jobs here in the United States. We are constantly bringing in people from other countries on these special visas who will take the jobs at a lower rate. Certainly our manufacturing is going to other countries. How often do you get a call from somebody who's perhaps one of these telephone marketeers, and they've got a very definite Indian accent, or obviously they're from another country, and they're setting up these pressure shops, you know, in other countries, to be phoning here? Why? Because they can get it done so much cheaper in other countries that people are glad to have the jobs. And what we're really doing is lowering the living standards of the American people. And so many people I've talked to who have lost their jobs have had to take jobs at a much lower wage level than they ever had before. And with that comes a progressive falling of the living standards of the middle class of America. Have you noticed that, Melody?
Yes. And what's interesting, too, is, you know, we talk about real estate, and people don't realize the amount of jobs that are involved in the real estate business. In construction alone, I believe that number was 1.8 million jobs that the construction could fall 50% during this correction. And that's just 1.8 million jobs in construction. And then we have to think about the equal amounts or more. Usually it's three times the amount of people laid off of supporting employment that will be affected by the bursting of this housing bubble. So we have a lot of jobs and employment that will be eliminated. And then we have to remember the type, a lot of these jobs in construction, they are the illegal aliens. These are illegal aliens that they don't speak a lot of English, and so what are they going to do? So you're going to have a lot of these illiterate illegal aliens that will be unemployed. So either they'll be filing and getting benefits, or what will they do? So it's going to be a big social problem in addition to the unemployment of people and of jobs that really probably weren't paying that much anyway. I can't imagine, you know, Home Depot and Lowe's pay high wages. So you'll see a lot of those jobs also be eliminated.
Well, I think we saw 500,000 primarily illegal immigrants demonstrating peacefully in Los Angeles on the 1st of May, on May Day of this year. But how'd you like to see a 500,000 illegal immigrants demonstrating violently and burning things in Los Angeles, in Chicago, and nations across this country? Because they want what's it coming to them, what they're entitled to. And believe me, there are agitators out there, professional communist agitators, financed by our great tax-exempt foundations and many times even by our own government. Actually encouraging unrest in our country. But then, of course, when you have unrest, what's the solution? Why, you have to have martial law, of course, to preserve our freedom. Isn't that what it's all about? And I think that really we have to be so seriously concerned, as Melody says, about all these people who are here illegally, who have been told that they're entitled to be here, that we stole the land from them. You know, back in the 1850s or 1860s, they're entitled to the land, and of course, they see how well we live. Why can't they live so well? And I understand how they feel. But if we are going to have any semblance of law and order, cannot let 20 million people, and believe me, there are at least 20 million people who are here illegally. They've been encouraged to come in by our government. The president says, I don't believe in amnesty. We just want these people all to stay here and become citizens. But this is not amnesty. I do not believe in a bilingual country, the president said. I think English should be the official language of our country. But I defy you to go to the president's website at whitehouse.gov. That's whitehouse.gov, www.whitehouse.gov, and look at the president's major speeches. They're all in English and in Spanish, too. So if he really believes that English should be the official language of our country, why is President Bush having his speeches posted in Spanish? Or is it possible, is it just possible, he is misleading the American people? Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Melody Cederstrom, and we're going to welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 right here at Radio Liberty. Well, Melody, tell us a little bit about what's going on now as far as the, what are your suggestions to people? What should they be doing as far as their investments?
Well, they need to protect what they have. A rule of thumb that they can go by is by placing a minimum of 30% of their assets in gold and silver coins. Based on the economic climate that we face, it really should be higher than 30%. It really should be anywhere between 30 and 50. And I have many clients that are fully vested in gold and silver coins. They understand the dollar. They understand the stock market, that it's paper that they're purchasing. Their digits, anything can happen at any time. And we're just in a period where it's better to be safe and to ride it out and protect what you have. So that's pretty much a rule of thumb. Of that 30% of your assets, 80% should be in gold and 20% should be in silver. And the reason you want to be heavier in gold is because gold is more stable. Silver is volatile. And even though silver is somewhat of a monetary metal, it is still very much an industrial metal. And it has a volatility. And when the demand in industry continues to decrease, it could provide some volatility to that commodity. Where gold, although many investors will look to gold as a commodity, we can't forget that it is money. It is wealth. It is value. It is money. And so just like the central banks, they don't go to silver. They go to gold. You don't have Russia increasing its reserves in silver. You have them increasing their reserves in gold. So that's why you want to be heavier in gold than silver. Silver is a great investment. And I have a lot of clients that are 100% vested in silver. Well, you have to look at your own investment objectives. But if you want to be well balanced in a portfolio, you'd want to go with 80% gold and 20% silver. And then in that 80% gold that you take, I believe you need to be diversified. You need to have some bullion coins in there. You need to have some investment grade numismatics in there. And then depending on what you have to invest, you can speculate and maybe pick up some, you know, key date coins and maybe some foreign coins, you know, some Swiss francs. But you want to be diversified in your gold. And I know I
hear... Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment with Melody Cederstrom. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest is Melody Cederstrom, and we were simply asking Melody, how should people be invested today? She feels that they should be invested 80% in gold, 20% in silver. She says she has some clients who are 100% invested in silver, but she prefers an 80-20. She thinks that probably at least 30% of people's investments should be in coins, and she thinks even up to 50% is unstable as the monetary system is today. And, of course, everything is being done to give us a feeling of stability. Everything's fine. You know, nothing's going to change. It's always going to be like it has been in the past. But is that really an accurate way of looking at it? Well, Melody, how can people get in touch with you if they'd like to and get your information?
Well, there's three different ways they can get in touch with me. They can call me at the 800 number, 800-375-4188. And again, that number is 1-800-375-4188. They can go to the website, and the website is Discount Gold and Silver Trading. And the word "and" is spelled out, discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. And you can either email me from that site, or you can email me directly at discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com, and that is discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com.
All right, fine. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience, you'd like to talk to Melody this evening, or have any questions or comments about the things we've been talking about, If you think that, of course, the price of gasoline and oil is coming down just because of the supply and demand, you think that the stock market is reaching its all-time high just by accident, just because people are so optimistic about our economy, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. One of the largest hedge funds in America, with assets somewhere close to $12, $14 billion, just lost $6 billion, gas futures. And as the head of the organization, the hedge fund, said, he called all of the people just to tell them how sorry he was. He had lost half of their investments. But, of course, he didn't tell them why that happened. Now, of course, a bond market is 10 times larger than the stock market at the long term, and people are buying bonds and investing in them. Why long-term bonds have been going up in price? Because the long-term interest rates have been going down. And what you are seeing is something a little strange, that you can actually buy bonds. The long-term interest rates are lower than the short-term interest rates. That is what's known as the inversion, and that, of course, is very deflationary. When you see short-term rates higher than long-term rates, this suggests we're on the verge of a deflation. Have you been looking into that aspect of it, Melody?
Well, we've seen the inversion, and the inversion has been over 3 months now, which determines that it is we're heading into a recession if one hasn't already started. So that's about the extent that I follow. I follow the yields, and I follow the 10-year and the 2-year.
Right. And, of course, what's happened to the difference between the 10-year and the 2-year?
Well, the 2-year is the yield is higher than the 10-year.
And, of course, that's what's known as the inversion.
The inversion.
And that, of course, whenever this has happened in the past, you've been on the edge of a deflation. In other words, this marks either deflation or a recession.
Well, there's a big debate out there, deflation, inflation. And the debate with deflation is how will it affect the price of gold. And we're working on a report of the differences between inflation and deflation, and that should be out in a week or so. And it's being done by a person who has a radio show on Saturday evening. He's a registered commodity trader. And all things considered, when you look at the, again, we go back to the fundamentals, it's still going to have a lot of inflationary areas. So we might be going into a stagflation.
Could you explain what stagflation is for our listeners? Because most people don't know what inflation is. They know what deflation is, but what's stagflation?
Well, my understanding is stagflation is when you have both inflation and deflation.
Right.
And so
that's the worst of both worlds, isn't it?
The worst of both worlds. And they fear that more than either or. So I think that's what we'll be heading into. You'll see some areas where the prices go down and other areas where prices will continue to go up because of our budget deficits, and they have to continue to print the funds. I mean, we're going into, if we enter another war, I mean, we have the fight on terror, the war against terror, and they're going to continue to fund that. We still have all the baby boomers that are going to have to be funded. So, I mean, there will not be a decrease or a contraction in monetary policy. So, therefore, the argument for deflation,
Well, of course, the thing is, had they kept raising the interest rates, that would have been leading to a deflation. By lowering the interest rates, they tend to produce inflation. And so right now, what are they doing? They're doing nothing. Now, whether they're going to raise them later, we don't know. But this last time, last two times around, they didn't do anything. They didn't raise the interest rates. They didn't lower them, because either raising or lowering interest rates can get you into real problems. And if you raise interest rates, that you raise, of course, it's more expensive to borrow. You begin to slow the economy. And then, of course, if you do not raise the interest rates and the inflation continues, then you destroy the value of the currency. So it's a lose-lose situation. And, of course, Alan Greenspan left at just the right time. Knowing full well what was going to happen, they stopped issuing the M3 funds, that is the amount of total money that's available and credit that's available in the entire United States economy, because they don't want the American people to know what they're doing. And what are they doing? Well, certainly Melody and I have a common friend named Bob Chapman who's keeping track of this, and what they're actually doing is pouring out about 10% a year in the way of increasing the monetary increments, the debt and the other monetary increments. When they do that 10%, that means you have an inflation rate of 10%. But they don't want the American people to know. So they say, oh, it's just too shucks. It's too expensive to provide those M3 figures. It's too complicated. We've been doing it for 50 years, but suddenly it's just too complicated. And the truth of the matter is they don't want the American people to know the truth. And that is that the value of the money that they have invested in the bank at 2 or 3% is losing 8% a year in value. So why bother to save? Eat, drink, and be merry, because, of course, you're not going to be able to save your money unless, of course, it's invested in something of inherent value. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question for Melody, and, of course, she's got a lot of great information, and, of course, you have Bob Chapman on your program a couple of times a week, don't you?
Yes, and in fact, if the listeners want to go to the website, we archive the programs on a weekly basis. They can just go to the website and listen to it from there. They're usually posted about an hour or two after the program on shortwave. So, and the shortwave frequency is 7.415, and at the 4 p.m. Eastern Time and 11 p.m. Eastern Time. It's replayed at the 11 o'clock show. So it's on twice a day.
Now go ahead and get the frequency out again in case people would like to listen to you.
The frequency is 7.415. And it's at 4 p.m. Eastern. We do a live show at 4, and then it is replayed at 11 o'clock on the Eastern Time. It's replayed. And then you can also listen to the archive on the website of discountgoldandsilvertrading.net.
All right, fine. And Chris, so what actually are you on WWCR with Dave France or who?
No, we're actually with WBCQ.
Okay, fine. Well, let's go to Ray calling us from Santa Cruz with a question. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Hi, Ray. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I do. I was just thinking, you know, the auto manufacturers are. Well, we're losing a lot of jobs, you know, with auto companies laying off people by the thousands. I'm just wondering what the exact effect would that be on inflation or you know, deflation or whatever.
All right. How would you respond to that, Melody?
Well, I don't think it would have exact effect.
Well, I would think it would really be sort of deflationary because it means there's going to be less jobs out there. And let's imagine you have somebody who's working for General Motors. They're making $120,000 a year. Well, of course, what they spend that $120,000, and that then generates about, it goes through an economy about six times, and every a good manufacturing job actually creates about six other jobs, you know, the people servicing, the people who service the people. So you lose that one good manufacturing job, you lose about six other jobs as well. That's the problem, Ray. And I would say that this is really is deflationary. It means we're just not going to have the production. We're not going to have that industrial base. And all this, I think, is going to lead to a progressively lowering the living standards overall of all of our people.
Yeah, and I guess basically they want to get rid of pensions, right?
They want to get rid of pensions. They want to get rid of disability payments.
Yeah,
they want to get rid of health care costs, and they can actually produce these cars over in China. The biggest car manufacturer in China today is General Motors. That's bigger than the Chinese. I mean, General Motors is in South America. Certainly the most popular car in Moscow today is a Ford. So they're cutting back on production here, and they're putting these factories in all over the world, and people don't understand that.
Anyway, you know, the other thing I wanted to mention was that I've noticed that certain, well, food prices are going up.
Well, of course, but the government says that we don't have inflation, so you're either going to have to believe the government or believe your lying eyes. What are you going to do?
Yeah, right. Yeah, you can't believe them. And, of course, I think it's awful that you can't, the budget, you can't figure out what was it you were mentioning, M1 or M2?
M1, M2, and M3. Yeah, and M3, they've just stopped
publishing. You can't figure out what they're doing with it.
Right.
Because they won't allow you to read the facts.
Well, Christian, we get them. You listen to our programs. You get them every week or every month, anyway, from Bob Chapman.
Right, okay.
Okay, anything else?
That's it.
God bless. Thanks. Let's go to Jeff, who's calling from Naples, Florida. Jeff, do you have a question for Melody?
Yes, Melody. The question is, given the information that you're talking about tonight, these corporations are not going to stop paying these politicians to ship jobs overseas. And if you can't ship the job overseas, well, hey, just bring them in here illegally to do it cheaper. We know that they're not going to stop doing that. So that being the case, is there absolutely any reason at all to believe that this economy is not going to sustain itself? It's going to collapse at some point, isn't it?
No, I mean, you're absolutely correct. I mean, we've all heard about the North American Union. They're not going to close the borders. They're not going to take these illegal aliens out. They want them here. It's all for the fall of our economy, the lowering of our living standards. And so this is all part of an agenda. You have pension plans that are being frozen. You have Verizon that freezes its pension plan. That just follows all the other ones, IBM, DuPont, and, you know, there's more that will follow. So, I mean, you're right. They're going to continue to move the jobs out of this country, and that's just part of one of the fundamentals.
And I think the words we're all searching for is there's nothing we can do about it.
No,
there's nothing the average person can do about it, is there?
Yes, there's a great... Go ahead, Melody, you tell him. What can we do?
You can protect your assets by buying gold and silver.
But even more than that, Jeff, what we need to do is get the American people to understand what's happening.
Yes.
Our good friend Tom DeWeese of the American Policy Center had sent out a great deal of flyers on this, about 100,000 of them. He said he has never gotten a response to anything he's ever sent out like this one. I think the American people are beginning to wake up. They're waking up about what happened on 9/11. They're waking about what's happening with this North American Union, because no matter what, the average American still loves this country. And when they realize they're being betrayed by our leaders, and our leaders are lying to them, at that point, I believe that there's going to be a backlash, and they're going to start getting rid of all the people in Congress who don't stand for America. And they're going to learn
that they're more optimistic than I am.
Well, I've been at this for 44 years. I'm more optimistic than I've ever been, Jeff. Anyway, God bless, and thanks so much for calling.
You know, Dr. Stan, I want to be optimistic, too, you know, with the people waking up. But you know what? I almost think it's just a little too late. And, I mean, yes, I believe in still going in there and putting your little vote in there and trying to vote them out of the office and try to do all the right things. I have customers who go out and try to talk to people, try to change things and everything like that. But when you have such major manipulation, when you have such major influence, will the slow waking America be in time?
Well, that is a big question, but of course what keeps me going and has kept me going for many years is the realization that this is really a spiritual battle, and we're called to do our best. I'm on the front lines 5 hours a day, and I know you are as well, trying to make the American people wake up, but only God knows what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Our job is to do our best, and we will not be faulted for doing that. I feel sorry for the good people, especially for the ministers out there who do not have the courage to speak out because they have government-subsidized churches. They're 501c3 churches, and they're far more afraid of government than they are of God. So I think we've got a real problem. Let's go to John, who's calling from Buffalo, New York. Hi, John. How you doing?
Hi. I got a question about annuities. They say that they're guaranteed and everything, and they're backed by the faith of government and all that. What do you feel about stocks and annuities, mostly annuities?
What do you think about stocks and annuities?
Well, the thing that scares me most is that it's guaranteed by the government. I don't think there's any guarantees, not when it comes to paper.
And the other thing is, of course, an annuity is in a fixed, fixed to the dollar. And if the dollar begins to lose value, which I think it probably will after the first of the year, it's really doing very well right now, but I think it's all artificial. And especially, you know, if we get into this war, I fear, with Iran, why, I think that anything that is tied to the dollar, whether it be CDs, whether it be bonds, whether it be annuities, I think all of these things could dramatically lose their value. I personally would urge everybody not to get into annuities, no matter what the fellow wants to sell them to you says.
Even CDs?
No, only a small amount in CDs, so you'll have some money to utilize. But hang on here. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. And, of course, we've got John calling, and, of course, he wants to know about annuities. And certainly, if you want to have money, that you have to have a certain amount of money on hand in case an emergency comes up, and that's fine. You get into T-bills, you can get into Swiss francs. Get into something that you can cash in, but do not be tied into anything that is tied to the dollar, in my estimation. What would you say, Melody?
I agree. I mean, if people believe that we're going to have a falling of the dollar, and that all the dollar is a digit, and it's paper, it's fiat currency, it's not backed by anything, and all paper currencies that have ever existed, it's been wiped out by inflation. And that's what's wrong with CDs. You know, a lot of people will hold their funds, and I talked to someone about this, and they like having the cash. They can see it. They feel safe with having their funds in a CD. But when you think of the rate of inflation and the taxes that you have to pay in addition to that, you're really losing money by keeping your cash in a CD or anything that's tied to the U.S. dollar.
And, you know, what you need, John, is to get hold of some stories about the history of money. We have a little pamphlet, an expensive pamphlet called The History of Money, the book The Creature from Jekyll Island, Professor Sutton's book, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, but my favorite is just an inexpensive little book that was written over 100 years ago about an episode that took place over 200 years ago, the French Revolution and what happened in France. The book is called Fiat Money Inflation in France. And if you read that book, it's like deja vu all over again. It's what's going on today. And the people who put their confidence in money ended up losing everything. I had a friend of mine, a doctor, his name was Dr. Eichels, a surgeon. He was the only surgeon in town bigger than I was, and I loved John, and I think he loved me, but we were good, very, very good friends, and he came from Germany. His grandmother had been very wealthy, and she had 1,000,000 marks stuffed into her mattress because she wanted to keep it at home, and when they got into her inflation, eventually, she couldn't even buy a loaf of bread for that 1,000,000 francs. And believe me, it can happen here. I believe that they are intent upon destroying the value of our currency. And when you destroy a currency, you destroy the stability of a society. What you need, I suggest, is my talk on financial tsunami going to such people as Paul Volcker and, of course, Alan Greenspan. We'll tell you after the break how to get them. Thanks for calling, John. But I certainly would not recommend annuities.
But their comeback is that everything will go correspondingly with the dollar.
Hold that just a moment here. Well, John, what's their comeback?
That everything's going to go up or down corresponding to the dollar. So if the dollar drops in value, all your price of all your commodities and loaf of bread and everything will suddenly drop too. Is what their comeback?
What is behind the value of the dollar today?
Nothing. The good faith and garbage.
That's right. Do you trust the government to always do what's audible and correct?
No. Whether or not they do, they're saying that if your CDs, let's say at $1,000 in CDs or annuities, and all of a sudden they went to $500, well, then everything else around you like a loaf of bread that was a dollar would suddenly drop to 50 cents is what they're trying to say, I guess.
Well, you can believe them if you want to. If you ask my opinion, I think that Bellity would agree with me. They want to sell you an annuity. Are they trying to sell you an annuity?
Yeah.
All right, fine. Do you think they're interested in you, or do you think they're interested in their profit?
No. Well, whether or not they are, I'm just curious overall. Will the dollar
It's not valid. I mean, there's no history, incident in all history where fiat money has survived. An annuity is tied to the fiat dollar. Anyway, God bless. Thanks for calling. And Bellity, we're out of time. Do you have a parting thought for our listeners?
And what's bad about annuities, once you're locked in for a real long time.
Right.
And there's severe penalties for trying to move out. And I worked with a bank who sold annuities, and they just flat out lied to the customers about the annuities and how easy it was to get your funds and everything like that. And so you do have to be careful with annuities. And I certainly, wouldn't do it. But they can call it discount gold and silver trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And you can go to the website at discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. Or send me an email at discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. And if you have an existing gold and silver portfolio, you can give me a call, because I know there's been a lot of misrepresentation on the different products out there. I'm not a believer in trading your coins, but sometimes you can tweak your portfolios to where you can get a benefit greater for the performance than perhaps what you have or what you're holding now. So I'll take a look at your current gold and silver portfolio, see if there's anything we can help you out with.
God bless you. Good night, Melody.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. That was Melody Cedarstrom. And, of course, here we are. And, of course, we'll be back here. This is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we're really dependent upon those of you who listen to our programs to help us. We do carry things like the Berkey water filters, either the Berkey Light or the Berkey, and we do, of course, offer health products, and we offer basically food products, storage food products. We do this, and, of course, this all goes into trying to keep this going. Believe me, I do not take a salary from what I do, nor does my wife. We work for one reason. We're trying to be the watchman on the wall to alert people to what's going to happen. We want to remind you about the all-day seminar we're having on the 29th of October. Do hope you can come. Constance Cumby will be here. Chris Pitto, who the producer of the award-winning video, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, will be here. And so remember the number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to go up on my webpage at radioliberty.com, that's radioliberty.com, you could pull down all of these articles we've written on finance, or we put them into a little pamphlet called The History of Money. That's The History of Money. We do actually have what I think is a very, very comprehensive talk and suggestions to be made. Remember, I'm not a financial advisor. I'm an amateur historian, but it's called the Financial Tsunami. And, of course, there's a syllabus containing all the government figures and Fed figures and Federal Reserve figures and explanations of M1, M2, M3. There's a talk either on video or DVD. That's the Financial Tsunami, and again, the number 1-800-544-8927. But a key to understanding everything are two things. One, my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. The other, the pamphlets, The Occult Hierarchy. The Occult Hierarchy. So please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, we'll be with you once again. May the Lord be with you.
Afternoon, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, wherever you're situated on this great, big, beautiful blue globe floating through the void of God's creation. It is Tuesday, the 26th of September, 2006, and yeah, buddy, there's a bunch of retired generals that recognize it, and they're screaming about it. That's right, they see the line in the sand, it's been crossed, and they're going to make a statement about it.